And I'm convinced that Paul was, that this accusation was leveled against Paul. And this, I think, is why he did not let the church in Corinth pay him. And even this got turned around. You ever notice when somebody doesn't like you, they get you going or coming? It doesn't make any difference what you do, they're going to get you. And Paul wasn't very well liked. One of the things that's kept me in the ministry all these years is that Paul stayed with it, and he was a lousy preacher, says he was. He was ugly. And good writer, but he couldn't preach worth a lick. And at least that's what he was accused of, and he admitted to it. And nobody, everywhere he went, nobody liked him. Well, a few liked him, but not very many. And so they didn't like him. And so here's what they did. Paul went into Corinth, and he didn't let the church pay him because there were his enemies who were saying, well, he's just in it for the money. And they took that and used it against him. They said, well, that proves he's not an apostle. Why? Because the other apostles accept pay. Think about that. The other apostles are supported. And the reason that Paul doesn't let us support him is that down in his heart he knows he's not really an apostle. That's why he says, am I not an apostle? I certainly am. He says, am I the only one who does not have a right to be paid, to receive money for his services? No, he argues in 1 Corinthians 9, I have just as much a right as anybody else. And so, and I won't take time to read it. In the first part of chapter 9, he very emphatically affirms his right to be supported by the church. Did you get that? I'm not going to go on until you get it. Say yes if you do. That's okay. I won't have to read those texts. He affirms his right to be supported by the church. Once he has established that, then he tells them the reason that he refused to take advantage of that right, to use that right. Keep in mind, his enemies were saying, well, you see, that's evidence he's not an apostle. He's saying, no, the reason I did not let you pay me was not because I know that I'm not an apostle. It's this reason. Now we're down to our text. He says to them, I have a right, but I have given up that right. And he goes on through from verse 16 on, and he discusses his attitude. Verse 19 is the key verse which explains this, when he says, for though I am free from all men, now that's an idiom, that means he has these rights, and you can look at it in context, I have made myself a slave to all. What is a slave? You see, a slave, if a man is a slave, it means a number of things, but one of the primary things it means if you're a slave is that you have no rights. I have made myself a slave, a man without rights. Why? In order that I might win the more. Look at verse 18, the last part. He says, I offer the gospel without charge so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. I have made myself a slave that I might win the more. Now, in the end of the chapter, and I wish I had time to speak on this, it's one of the most fascinating texts in the New Testament, is the great athletic metaphor, which comes at the end of 1 Corinthians 9, in which Paul, and he wrote a few months after AD 51, when the Isthmian Games were at Corinth, he makes reference to the crown and the prize. We know of that because he says only one receives a prize, and in the big four Panhellenic Games, they only gave first prize. In lesser city festivals, they gave first, second, third, and sometimes fourth prizes. And he is not talking about running a race and winning a victory in the sense of getting to heaven. In this great athletic metaphor, he talks about running a race and winning a victory in terms of getting the job done. What he is saying is this: when I came to Corinth, I didn't come to mess around. Corinth was a rough place to establish a church. Good thing is, before the days of church growth, the experts would never try to start a church in Corinth. But Corinth was a rough place to try to establish the church. And he said, when I came to town, I came to get the job done. Just like those athletes a few months ago who came to Isthmus, which is on the outskirts of Corinth, to the great stadium there. They came, they didn't come to mess around. They didn't get in that race just to loaf. They got in that race to win. And those fighters, when they got in the ring, they got in there to win. And I came to Corinth to win. You go applaud the athletes and pay them a big salary, and you criticize me. And what I'm doing is more important than what they did. See the argument? And so we come to our text. He talks about something that I want to focus on, and that is his compulsion. Why did I do this? You see, I have stated his policy. You got that? The problem was the denial of his apostleship. The accusation, well, he doesn't let us pay him because he knows he's not an apostle. His policy. His policy was what? Number one, I have the right. I am an apostle. Number two, I have given up that right. Why? Why? What drives a man to do that? It drives him like an athlete who will give up anything in order to win. He tells us in our text, I am under compulsion. I'm going to talk to you this morning about compulsion. Compulsion. The sense of mustness, the sense of have to. And when I look at the new students coming in, I like what I see. And I think you have this compulsion. I'm not accusing you of not having it. You wouldn't be here if you didn't have some kind of compulsion. But I wanted to talk about that with you. You see, compulsion is opposed to the spirit of the age. This is the age of detachment. This is the age of egocentrism. This is the age which says, I care about me. The only compulsion I have is to please myself. Compulsion. I think of the lines that come from Christopher Fry's work, The Lady's Knot for Burning, in which he says, be disturbed, madam, be disturbed to the extent of a tut-tut, and I will thank God for all civilization. And we live in a world that does not care for anything or anybody, and the church is buying into this spirit. The world is going to hell. The babies are dying in the abortion mills. The pornographers are taking over, and the church can't even work up a good tut-tut. Why? We don't care. There is no compulsion. This is the day of the insulated heart. When men are butterflies flitting their way through a charming existence. And the Christian who is like this is a caricature of the Master. Superficial, charming, intelligent, friendly people, ever alert to the winds of change, but never gripped by a compulsion. The modern pulpit cries out for great minds attached to great hearts. And what is a great heart? It's a heart broken by a compulsion. Did you get that? If your heart never gets broken by a compulsion, stay out of the pulpit. We've got enough cool professionals. We've already, those jobs have all been taken. We've got our quota. We don't need you. The day will come, if you're in the local ministry, and not just the preaching ministry, when you will be asked, and take my word for it, I've been there many times, you will be asked to minister to people in a situation that is so tragic and complicated and hopeless that you will have no answer. And the only thing that you will have to offer is a broken heart, and if your heart is turned to stone, you'll have nothing to offer. And what breaks the heart properly? The compulsion. First of all, compulsion is the secret of reality. He says in the athletic metaphor at the end of this chapter, I fight as one not beating the air. A modern translation has it shadow boxing, which misses it entirely. I wish the translators would read history books. He's not talking about they didn't know anything of shadow boxing in the ancient world. What he's talking about is a man who got into the pancratium, which was a fight to the death. And he says, and what he's saying in an amplified interpretation of his metaphor, if I had showed up in Corinth, like a fighter who goes into the ring, and he's just in there swinging his fist aimlessly, a fellow get killed doing that. I came to strike blows. Do I get that? I didn't come to swing and miss. I came to swing and hit. By the way, when you're doing business with the devil, only reality will count, because he's real. And what he's doing is real. And I think the church today could stand a large dose of reality. One of the reasons we're keeping some of the best minds among the non-Christians out of the church is they show up at the church to visit, and what do they see? Unreality. I wish I had time to talk about that. You see, what makes the difference between a phony and a real, and the real thing? Many things, but one of them is a compulsion. You got that? The real Christian, the real leader, has a compulsion that the counterfeit never knows anything about. One of my favorite characters from the 16th century, Erasmus, tells the story about a preacher named Robert who boasted to his vicar that he could wring tears from anyone when he got in the pulpit, and his vicar scoffed. All right, boasted Robert, you sit in my congregation tomorrow and I'll make you weep. The vicar accepted the challenge. Robert gave a moving sermon on the amazing mercy of God. He upbraided his listeners for their ingratitude for the mercy of God. And then he said, "You hard of heart, do you begrudge God even a tear?" And the vicar wept. The preacher said, "I win," and sat down. That evening they had supper together, and Robert was crowing over his victory. The vicar replied, "I did not weep because of what you said. I wept to think that a man should so prostitute his gift." The saddest thing in the world, I believe, at least one of the saddest, is a man in the pulpit, a teacher in the classroom with no compulsion. Paul gave up his paycheck, brother, that's reality. And why did he do it? I love this. And this, by the way, this is why I picked this text to teach on. I'm going to have to move along. He said, "I did it. Why? I'm under compulsion, for woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. If I do this voluntarily, I have a reward." What was his reward? Why did I give up my right to be paid and work extra hours to support myself and also do the work of the church? I did it because I was looking for a reward. What was it? Heaven, right? Possibly. He didn't say that here. Soul, right? Wrong. Says that elsewhere. Doesn't say it here. He uses the athletic metaphor elsewhere. He says, "You are my joy and crown." Doesn't say it here. What is his reward? This is absolutely devastating to the modern world spirit. Look at this. Verse 18. "What then is my reward?" Here's my reward. "That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel." Here's my reward. I get to give up my right to a paycheck and preach for nothing. That's my reward. Say what? You might feel Paul's head. That's a real reward, isn't it? Is it a reward to give up your rights to the gospel? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The opportunity to give up my right, that's my reward. Hear me. This moves us into reality. I speak this morning of the great privilege of finding something so much bigger and better and more important and more lovely than ourselves that it's worth sacrificing self for. That's the compulsion. It's worth more than eternity. It's worth more than jewels. It's worth more than human reward to find something so important, so beautiful, that it's worth giving up my rights for. If you've found that, you have a great reward. And I think some of you have found that. That's why you're here. You'll never forget it. You see, this keeps us from going into our own business, and it keeps us in the King's business. Reality. If we are in the business of protecting our rights, we can never be more than imitation servants. We'll join the ranks of those who spend their lives looking for thorns to sit on, and we'll find them. If you never find that reward, you'll be a freelance Christian. You'll belong forever to the First Independent Church of the Lone Ranger. You'll never belong to anything because you'll never have a commitment. And you'll never have a commitment because you'll never have a compulsion. And you'll quit, probably. But you say, where's the joy in this? This sounds grim. Hear me. The joy in Christian service for Paul, and the joy for you, and the joy for me, is where the joy has always been. The other side of the cross. Superficial pleasure and happiness is on this side of the cross, but as with Jesus, who for the joy endured the cross, despising the shame. And that's where our joy is. A fellow called Tweedy wrote, "The daring of Captain Scott in his search for the South Pole, the devotion of a Father Damien, which brought him to a leper's grave on Molokai, the self-forgetfulness of Arnold Toynbee, deserting the cultured fellowship of England's choicest spirits in Oxford to live as a brother and share the lot of the riffraff in London slums, find their match in the daring and devotion and of self-forgetfulness in thousands of ministers. These men took up their task, not because it was rewarding and easy, but because it needed them and it was terribly hard." And so the compulsion is the key to reality. The bottom line is this: the greatest reward this side of heaven is something worth dying for. Secondly, compulsion is a secret of fidelity. In the athletic metaphor, he says, "I buffet my body, which is the word for training, that I, lest after I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified. He's not talking about going to hell. He's talking about not getting the job done. The picture is of the athlete who didn't do his training, who didn't follow the rules, who didn't do what he had to do to finish the course, and he wasn't allowed to finish. He was disqualified, thrown out. Compulsion is the secret not only of reality, but of fidelity, of keeping with it. The modern tragedy. Here's a modern tragedy. The fellow who in his youth stands barefoot before the burning bush and ends up as a middle-aged man on the backside of Sinai selling life insurance. The ministry is not a revocable trust. One of my favorite stories, I tell it every chance I get. Sometimes I tell it just to me, if nobody's around. No, we're not. I wake up and tell myself this story. Comes toward the end of Herodotus. And he's talking about the Battle of Plataea. That was the last great battle which drove the last of the Persians out of Europe. Anyway, I won't get into that. But good thing it did. We'd be Oriental right now in culture, probably. But a young man showed up for the battle from one of the lesser city states. and he wanted to do well for the folks back home. He didn't mind dying, but he didn't want to run. He didn't want to quit the battle. So Herodotus tells us he got a big boat anchor, stone, the hole in it. He tied a rope to the boat anchor and tied the other end to his belt. And he hauled the boat anchor into battle. And he'd run to the battle, so he got to the place where it was the thickest, and he'd throw out the anchor, and he had to fight. he couldn't run. He tried to run dragging a boat anchor. He'd fight, you know, like crazy, because he didn't trust himself. And then if the battle line moved forward, he'd haul in the boat anchor, run forward to where the battle's the thickest, throw out the anchor, and fight some more. I love that story is because been times when I would have run away if I hadn't had an anchor. Maybe you'll run away without an anchor. And I think Paul's compulsion was the anchor that kept him in there. If there's no compulsion, you'll quit. Compulsion is the secret of fidelity. Well, I wish I had more time to talk about that. But he says, even if I want to quit, I can't. Why? Because if I do it voluntarily, I have a reward, verse 17. But if I do it against my will, I have a stewardship. I love this. You know, I used to obey my father. I obeyed my daddy. Not perfectly, but consistently. I obeyed my daddy. I would like to claim that as a virtue, the virtue of fidelity. It really was the virtue of wisdom. And that's what Paul is saying here. He said, I give up my rights to be paid. Doesn't prove I'm not an apostle. It proves I had a compulsion. This is why I did it. I came to get the job done. And since I was being criticized for being a phony apostle, I just didn't let you pay me. Remove that criticism. But he said, even if I didn't want to do that, I got to do this kind of thing anyway. Why? I have a stewardship. There's a word, a strange word we need to rehear today, redefine. The word duty. D-U-T-Y. Duty. Hear me, when all else is gone, the covenant is still there. And if everything else fled from Paul, every other reason, every other feeling, and that's the word which is killing the church today, when it was all gone, he still had his stewardship. God had given him a job. This is what the apostle was saying. He said, I can't take too much credit because even if I didn't want to do it, I had to do it anyway. Why? God gave me a job to do. The compulsion of duty. This is the man who wrote, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Compulsion is the key to fidelity. Not a fashionable word in the me-centered culture. And today, freedom in Christ is being twisted into freedom from covenant. I wish I had time to talk about that. Very important concept. We're becoming so free, we can do anything anymore. But what about our duty? Service is a joy, but it's not a worldly pleasure. And when the superficial pleasure wears through, the duty is still there. Just as the hound of hell kept the ancients in the fortress of death, so the hound of heaven keeps us in the pulpit and in the classroom. Why? Because we've got a job to do. The Bible says, quit you like men and be strong. My paraphrase is, quit belly aching and do your job. And Paul said, I got a job to do, whether I feel the way about the compulsion or not. And last of all, compulsion, not only is it the secret, in my opinion, reality and to fidelity, the secret to quality. He says, I run in such a way as to win the prize, to serve well. You see, Corinth was a tough outfit, as I've already said, the Corinthians were. And only the best would get the job done. Hear me. Cheap discipleship may be sanctioned by modern sentimentalism, but it's not going to get the job done. And if the job doesn't get done, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference what else happens. We are not here to go through the motions. We are here to get the job done. That's why Paul gave up his paycheck. He came to Corinth to do the job, as I've already suggested. And this requires quality. The thing I cannot understand is the leader in the church, whether it's the person teaching in the Bible school classroom or in the pulpit or a father in the home or a parent in the home, the modern lack of intensity. Paul had that, didn't he? I mean, he was intense. And intensity brings quality. Intensity will make you do the kind of work that when you leave this school, you'll be a quality servant. Somebody who just doesn't just have a degree, but you'll have somebody who knows how to do a job. Because we've got a job to do. Quality is required for winning in the real world. Compulsion will make you a preacher of real sermons, not cheap imitations. It will make you a teacher, not a homiletical junk man. Hamish McKenzie, in his book Preaching the Eternities, writes, and he pictures in his writing, a preacher writing a sermon, and he says this preacher forces himself to his desk. We got our seniors preaching students who relate to this. He forces himself to his desk, writes a half a page, cancels most of it, buries his head in his hands, rises and walks the room, falls on his knees, goes back to his swivel chair, repeats the whole process, doggedly working until at last the sentences begin to march and he thrills that the conflict is almost over. And then he remembers that he has to do it again next week. There is no escape. Indeed, he gradually learns that there cannot be an escape. This is the price of proclaiming the word, blood and tears. Yet there is virtue in the blood and converting grace in the tears. And only a compulsion will make a preacher prepare his sermons like that. And only if he prepares his sermons like that is he the real thing. And does his ministry have any quality? Well, I'm finished. Let me wrap it up. Compulsion. I'd like to say to our students, especially our incoming students, that we love you. And we ask you, is your heart in this thing? I'm trying to say this morning, and not saying it very well, that we see in our text that Paul not only brought his apostolic mind to Corinth, but he brought his heart. Thus he got the job done. Is your heart, did you bring your heart with you? If not, go off somewhere and ask God to help you have a new heart. If your heart's never going to be in it, you might as well go home now. You will sometime, or we will wish you did. Compulsion, the secret of reality and fidelity and quality. Paul says, woe is me if I preach not the gospel. And I say to you, not simply as your teacher or your dad, but also as your brother, let us study together in the next few years the apostolic prophetic word so you can join me in teaching it. Did you hear that? Brother, join me in teaching it. But first, let us agree to have the heart of the servant and the compulsion. Remember the compulsion. Let us serve as those who are driven, who can do nothing else, who can do nothing cheap, who cannot quit because our heart has been claimed by another.
Thank you, Dr. Chambers. Most of you have already discovered that our first announcement sheet is available this morning. It's printed on a green paper. There are a few extra copies up here to my right, which you're invited to pick up if you've not already received yours. You're dismissed.